Good afternoon, everybody. This is Debbie Q with The Right Shoe, a podcast about all things strange and unusual, especially in reference to a death. And today we have a strange and unusual one. This murder actually happened in the wee hours of November 30th, 1984. This is the case of Deborah Lynn Wilson. Now, Deborah Wilson was, she lived in Woodbury, New Jersey, but she went to Drexel University, which is in Philadelphia. Drexel University is actually in a very lovely section of Philadelphia. It's University City. Penn is there, and it's really cool how they have it set up. It's literally like college everywhere, and there's a lot of medical offices. And if you're familiar with Philadelphia, it's just in this little University City. That's exactly what it sounds like. Big old college, but it's not like a college where there's walls around it. It's just literally in the middle of the city. Debbie was a math major. One night she had a study late. So her and her boyfriend, Desmond Tycho, were studying together, and he was tired. He wanted to leave, and she was determined. She had to finish whatever she was doing. She would have succeeded greatly if this hadn't happened on November 30th, 1984. Desmond would leave to go home. This is what he told investigators the next day. And the next morning, when everyone came into Drexel, Debbie Wilson lay at the bottom of a stairwell, dead. The scene was a bit peculiar. She was on her back, fully dressed in jeans and a blouse, and her overcoat, whatever she had been wearing as a coat, because I mean, it was obviously cold, it was November, it was placed over her body. She hadn't been sexually assaulted, it didn't seem, but her face did show severe bruising. Her neck had a lot of bruising. There was foam coming out of her mouth, which is it's a big sign of strangulation. The most curious thing was that she didn't have any shoes or socks on. And when I first heard of this, I thought, oh my gosh, a murder with a Debbie Philadelphia and a shoe connection. I immediately jumped on it and I wanted to really look into it. And it is an interesting case. Before I get into it totally and completely, I want to do the right shoe business. I want to give a huge shout out and a thank you to Sugar Coated Murder. Sugar Coated Murder is a great podcast. There's two sisters, Ann and Karen. They bake and talk about a murder. Now, baking to them is a deep sign of love. Their mother was a baker, and they often baked with her during holiday times or any old time. But to them, it really symbolized the love between them and the love they had for others. So it was really sweet when they said it like that. And being from such a big Italian family myself that was deeply loving, we showed our love by screaming at each other, but that's a whole other story. But seriously, you know, it really did bring back all the memories of my own childhood when they were talking about it. It's a great podcast. I mean, and I had so much fun with them. We talked about the murder of Denise Amber Lee. And we also made banana Foster muffins. I was eating them before they were done. And it was a lot of fun. It really was. So please listen to Sugar Coated Murder. The whole podcast is great. Any podcasting platform has Sugar Coated Murder and Ann and Karen. Very cool. That being said, my Instagram is rightshoepodcast__. It used to be Shopaholic Deb, but I finally changed it. Yay me. rightshoepodcast_. Now, this case was fascinating to me on many levels. They come into school, the students. They see Deborah dead at the foot of a stairwell. Her shoes and socks are gone. She looks like she's been strangled. While they're coroning off the section, it was Randall Hall. The stairwell she was found in was next to a computer room that she had been working in. And they cordoned off that whole section. They were outside doing this when some guy ran up to them looking completely crazed. And it was their boyfriend, Desmond Tycho. And he was like, look, something's going on with my girlfriend, Deborah Wilson. Well, he said this name before they had even made an announcement. They were like, what? He was technically, so far, the last person to have seen her. they said, wait, how do you know about Deborah Wilson? What's going on? What do you know about Deborah Wilson? He was like, look, I left Deborah and me. We've been going out for a while. We have a great relationship. We were studying last night. I left her. I told her, I have to go home. I want to go to bed. She wanted to stay. He asked a security guard take her back to her car because he was nervous about her being there that late. You know, this isn't like a college campus where Drexel University is. It's literally in the middle of the city. So you're not in this little college dorm room to a parking lot or study hall to a parking lot. You're in the middle of the city. She had parked her car outside. And he said, when I came in this morning, I saw her car still sitting there. I know something's wrong. But they just viewed it as very suspicious. So right on off the bat, Desmond Tyco's top of their list. Now, because he said that he had asked the security guards to watch out for her, they had to go to the security team and they would get to a Bryce Chapman first. Now, Bryce Chapman said that he had pawned it off on Bronson Ziegler, another security person, because I guess he was busy. Bronson Ziegler would actually say, I gave it to David Dixon, another security guard. Now, David Dixon's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. He said, last night, when I walked past Randall Hall, I heard printers going. I never saw anyone. I assumed everyone was busy and walked out. So here are three different security guards saying three different things. None of them saw Deborah. They had to bring in all three security guards and interview them more extensively, and Desmond Tyco. Desmond was like, look, I told you already. He said, I knew something had happened because I told the security officers to walk her to her car. Her car was out there. They didn't know what to think. Like, was this guy just, did they get in a fight in the hallway? And then he asked security to watch. Like, they don't know. So he was just as good. I mean, everybody that comes into this picture, it's crazy how many people just went to the top of the list right away because everybody that came into the picture made such sense. Desmond says, listen, up and down, it was not me. I'll take a lie detector. I'll do whatever you want. So in the meantime, they interview the three security guards, but they also looked into their background. Now, right away, Bronson Ziegler comes screaming their attention because he had burglary raps on his criminal sheet that he never said when he got that security job. As a security person, robbery and being arrested or convicted for it, you should not be a security person in a college. They were very suspicious of Bronson Ziegler. They went through each one, and Bronson Ziegler was furious. He was like, look, I did not do this. Okay, yes, I did a few robberies. I did not kill anybody. I never even saw her. And there was nothing really to tie him to it. That was the problem with all three security guards that night. There was nothing to tie them to the murder. So they kind of washed that away. So they started concentrating on students. In the meantime, they have a crime scene unit come in and they swabbed everything. And they managed. Now, back in 1984, they did not have DNA, but they did have blood type, which isn't a lot, but I mean, a type A goes to an O. That would at least squash the pool down a little bit. They find on this one chair right where Deborah was sitting, Deborah's blood was there and she was a type O. And there was one drop and it was a type A. They theorized, look, doesn't match Deborah's. It was just a tiny little blood drop. Must have came from the killer. As they're going through, David Chang comes to the cops and says, look, there's a guy named Ashlyn Berhard, and he was acting so strange the next day after Debbie's death. He said, I'm just very suspicious. He almost scared that he did scare this one girl. After the murder, Ashlyn was fooling around, and he would take a pencil, grab this girl right next to him in this lab, right in front of David Chang, and put a pencil up to her throat and say, I'll kill you next. Now, this is not funny, and he thought it was hilarious at the time. It really struck David Chang as odd, and they were like, well, you know, what else was weird? And he said, well, it was weird. He left at 1 o'clock, and then they bring Ashlyn in, and they're like, well, where were you? You know, this guy David Chang said you put a pencil up to this girl's throat, and he said, look, it wasn't me. He said, from 1 to 4, I couldn't, you know, I fell asleep. He was starting to look like a really good suspect, especially when he failed the polygraph. Now, I know polygraphs, so, you know, they're not, they're never introduced into courtrooms because polygraphs really are, there's too many issues with them. It really does depend on who's reading them. You have to have a good investigator. There, you know, it's the reasons that they're not submitted as evidence. But he did fail it. When they finally tested him, his blood type wasn't A. They were like, okay, you know, that's, you know, it's not him. Time is going on at this point. I mean, this happened in 1984, and quite a few years would pass before her case would even get a boil under it. So they get to this guy. There's another person that, you know, because they're asking people for information or help. And this girl comes in and says, look, this guy, Enrique Strang, he's an art student. He's really strange. He was a photographer. She said, he came up to me and he really bugged her about taking her picture. And he kept saying, come on, you're so pretty. I'll give you the pictures. I just want to get practice. And she was like, no, no. And he would not leave her alone. She really became emphatic and was like, get away from me. They find out that Deborah had said yes to the pictures. They thought that was very strange, especially when the girl said he was very, very aggressive. He was just an odd character. They test him. His blood type is A. So Enrique Strang goes to the top of the list. And they were really looking at him for a long time, especially when they found out that he took a lot of pictures of Deborah. And the girl said how aggressive he was. He said, look, I was with this teacher the whole night. I wasn't even near the computer room. And the teacher did verify. Everyone wanted her case solved. You know, the teacher, she said that the investigators, she was honest and it was true. I mean, the teacher vouched for him and said, look, he was in that. He never stepped in that computer room the whole night. And then the case events, the boyfriend kind of grew cold because there was just nothing to tie him there. And he gave his blood willingly. I don't think he was a type A. It just, and nothing seemed to match. And the case went pretty by the wayside for a while until 1992, I want to say. It went cold for quite some time until they brought it to the VDOC Society. Now, the VDOC Society is in Philadelphia. It meets every year. The VDOC Society, actually, they looked at the Boy in the Box case for many, you know, they've been looking at it for many years. The VDOC Society was founded in 1990. So this was probably one of their first cases because she died in 1984 and this started in 1990, so they probably brought, you know, the cold case must have came up again. I'm sure they had this cold case unit, and every so often, Deborah Wilson's case came up. The VDOC Society it's a members-only crime-solving club in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It is named for Eugene Francois VDOC, the groundbreaking 19th-century French detective who helped police by using the psychology of the criminal to solve cold case homicides. VDOC was a formal criminal himself and used his knowledge of the criminal mind to look at murder from the psychological perspective. The members are FBI profilers, current and former, homicide investigators, scientists, psychologists, prosecutors, coroners, and forensic professionals. They have to be, oh wow, membership is capped at 82. VDOC died at age 82, so it can't have any more than 82 people. It solved its first case in 1991 by clearing an innocent man. In addition to the Boy in the Box, I figured they worked on that. They did solve the murder of Terry Brooks, who was a night manager of a Roy Rogers in Bucks County, and she had been murdered by her boyfriend. Her murder was not solved until 1999, but the VDOC Society was instrumental in helping them. VDOC Society is pretty fascinating. Well, they went over everything and they found a glaring inconsistency that really bugged them. After they went over and over certain things and then interviewed certain students, they found that one of the security guards, David Dixon, who left shortly after the murder and he went into the military, he said something that was peculiar because, and now Deborah was in there after 1:30 when her boyfriend had left. David Dixon was one of the security guards that had said he never, you know, he had passed by the room. He heard printers going and he didn't want to bother anybody because it was 1:30 in the morning. And he said, I don't want to bother any students. But the problem is that everything got shut down at about 10:30. It really struck out to the VDOC Society. And they said, is there any way you can look back into this guy, David Dixon? Where's David Dixon? He's a military guy. He's probably overseas. They look him up. They find out that he is actually in the South Philly Naval Base. South Philly had a naval yard for many years. It closed, in 2000, I don't know when it closed, but 1993, I was going to school at Philadelphia Community College, and there was a guy, can't even remember his name, whatever his name was, God bless you, but he lived on the Philadelphia Naval Base. So I did get to see it. It's just like any other. When I met my brother-in-law in Germany, when we went to Oktoberfest, they have the military bases and where you can go shopping. It's usually cheaper to help out the military family. The Naval Base, that's where David Dixon was. And they want to talk to him. Well, there's this peculiar thing when they go and they start looking into some robberies that happen in the Naval Yard. Deborah Wilson had been wearing white sneakers and they were gone. They never found them. They never even found their socks. On the Naval Base, there were several instances where women complained that their white sneakers had been stolen from their home several times. This isn't once. It was a few times. The naval officers, the people that they complained to, whoever the, you know, the heads of this, of the naval yard, whoever that may be that you make complaints to, they said, oh my God, these women are missing their husbands. They're nuts. That's literally what they said. There must be just missing their husbands. So they never took it even into consideration that it was true, but it was. Their sneakers were missing. Not only that, they found that he was a fifth degree in karate black belt. He had been court-martialed from the Army in 1979 for stealing a private's sneakers in Korea. They began investigating Dixon more and more. They raided his apartment and storage locker on the base. They discovered 20 pair of white women's sneakers wrapped in plastic bags and 77 foot fetish videos. Deborah Wilson's sneakers, as I said, were white. Now, a former co-worker at SmithKline Beecham testified that Dixon was fired from his maintenance job for sending her a sexually explicit letter and then whispering over the phone that he was going to rape her. Yeah, I mean, he was... Oh, and actually, well, yeah, this... I don't want to jump ahead. At this point, they just... I guess they kind of knew that David Dixon was in trouble. You know, they get a hold of David Dixon. Now, this was, at this point, it was September 1993 when they arrested David Dixon. Now, he was just furious and he refused to talk. So they had to put stuff together. With everything they had, they also had, now this was one thing because, you know, it's still somewhat circumstantial, but they theorized this, and then there was one thing that really, because there was a few bruises on Deborah that they never knew what they were. There were several marks on Deborah that they couldn't tell where they had come from. So they went through, and this is what they theorized, and it is pretty interesting. Because I did see some were questioning, well, how were they so sure? I mean, it's still somewhat circumstantial, but I mean, first of all, that is really weird that her shoes and socks were missing. They were white sneakers. Also, when he had been arrested, there was a jailhouse snitch that said, he said, that rich bitch got what she deserved. I mean, this is alleged. Now, he was very quiet. He would never speak. He never really opened his mouth. When they took him to trial, they theorized that when he had been called to take her to her car, she actually said, no, I don't want to, I'm fine. And he got like put off by that. He karate chopped her in the back of the neck. He wanted to take her sneakers, lunged at her, and then the marks. He was carrying a security clock. A security clock has these weird marks on the, it's like a round thing that is given to security guards. It keeps track of what they're doing on their hours. So, you know, they can't run out, you know, oh yeah, I'm watching your business and then run out for 8 hours and then come back. The security clock takes accounts for their hours. Well, they matched on her face, the mark on her forehead, the security clock, perfectly. And he was the one who was supposed to have gotten her. After he realized that he really hurt her, initially he had just wanted her sneakers, he decided to kill her to cover up his actions. So he strangled her, dragged her body to the stairwell, and took her socks and sneakers. He was very much quiet till the end. Now, in the jail cell, he would be called Dr. Shaw. I mean, there was a lot of jokes made on his behalf. This is where he told the guy, I did kill her. She was a little rich bitch, got what she deserved, that whole thing. He would not talk. So when they first went to trial, it was 10-2 for guilty, but the jury was deadlocked and they come to a decision. So they had another trial. It was almost deadlocked again. He was actually found guilty of second degree murder in December 1995 and was sentenced to life in prison. And there was a psychiatrist who testified that Dixon's obsession with white sneakers crossed a sociopathic line. Actually, Dixon's criminal behavior is what prompted him to move between active duty and the Army Reserves. Dixon was able to escape each location without detection, but the behavior did follow him from base to base. This is why sneakers were always missing and little stuff was going on. And he was, you know, at Dixon at Smith Klein Beecham, he was saying that the one girl, he was going to rape her. The case is an excellent argument for the use of FBI national database and the use of documented crime in the U.S. military that can be accessed by military and law enforcement around the world. Burglary is considered a felony. Therefore, it would be an appropriate action to enter the crime into a worldwide system. The FBI National Database would help to track the clues to solve crimes. So he was convicted. I mean, he to this day maintains his innocence. I often wonder because I never heard, I mean, I'm sure they tested his blood at least to see that he was an A type. But it does sound, because I read some arguments that could, you know, did they test his blood? But when you go to jail, I know for a fact that they do test your blood type. It's a real shame. I mean, he never opened his mouth, though, so they had to really theorize what had happened. That's pretty amazing that he was that obsessed with white sneakers and socks that he killed somebody. I did go on to, it used to be fantastic. It was called this UJS portal, and you could go on and really, now it's just so, oh my God, it took me forever to find out because I really wanted to see if he was still in jail. And he is. He has filed an appeal every year since he's been in jail. Now, as far as 2017, that was the last appeal that I've seen. Now, he would be 61 now. In 2017, it was the last appeal I saw that was denied, and that was denied. He had complained they had ineffective counsel, and they told him, well, you didn't even put this appeal in on time, so therefore, it's no good, and I have not seen anything from him since. That was 2017, so that was 4 years ago. I'm assuming, I looked everywhere, I believe, he's 61, that's not too old, so I believe he's still alive in a Pennsylvania facility. So that was the story of Deborah Wilson. I mean, a lot of her friends and family, I had watched a few shows about her. There was one on ID Channel, Unusual Suspects. It was very good. You know, her friends, just said she was such like a great person. She could have given the world so much, and she was taken for her socks and shoes. Like, that is just horrible. And then there were so many people that had been pointed the finger at that they were the person that killed her. So that was the case of Deborah Lynn Wilson. Again, Woodbury, New Jersey was where she lived. She went to Drexel. And that's a really, that's a tough one. I hadn't heard that before. Yes, I have some good cases coming up. I want to get onto my website because I do like having pictures so that if somebody goes on the website, they can look up the pictures. I know you can just go on Google, but it is easy when you could just go to a website and look at everything right there. I can't believe I never heard of that case before. I'm surprised. I'm sure there's unfortunately a lot of them, but that was a strange one. That being said, this is Debbie Q, and you listen to The Right Shoe.